Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Nerds Table at Newsbusters. Today, our topic, we're discussing how America hasn't been the same since they passed the 17th Amendment calling for the direct election of senators. Oh, and watch for Danny over there at the end of the table. He'll talk your ear off about how Abraham Lincoln was a habeas corpus suspending tyrant. You might eat fast and put your tots in your pocket. Now, if you don't know habeas corpus from Flipper the Porpoise, we apologize. Actually, the real topic today is National Public Radio, which is really demonstrating right now the dramatic difference in how the media treat Democrats versus Republicans. Isn't it funny how liberals have called Fox News state-run TV when they actually rely on state-run TV at PBS and they love state-run radio at NPR? Of course, they only sound state-run when Democrats are in power. Under Republicans, it sounds more like, Dingo ate your baby! They get very upset. And not just under this last Republican president, just in general. You know, Bush and Cheney were a nightmare too. On Monday's morning edition, broadcast across America, NPR Justice Department reporter Carrie Johnson offered a 7-minute puff piece on the confirmation of Merrick Garland to be Attorney General. When you're a Democrat, the sources in your biographical story are old friends, family members, co-workers. We get heart-tugging stories. When young Merrick was a rising star at his D.C. law firm, he became a writing coach for a lowly employee in the copy center, eventually writing him a recommendation for law school. Johnson said the man warmly remembers his mentor and finds him still a little old school, still humble, still willing to help. It's like they're writing a movie script. Johnson then touted how Garland told a Harvard audience about his work in the Carter administration by linking it to the movies. American Hustle, about the Abscam case. Argo, about hostages in Iran. And most important, The Miracle on Ice, which was about the Lake Placid Olympics, where Garland did work on security. Now, does anyone remember, first of all, that the movie's simply called Miracle? But does anybody remember the Merrick Garland scene? The exciting scene with the security detail? Never mind the hockey game. But this, you know, he was just trying to relate the 70s to these young people. But NPR thinks this kind of happy fact treatment makes all the liberals in the audience smile. They don't really consider there are grumpy conservatives like me listening to this in their car on the commute. Then they go to, the law professors. A Georgetown law professor named Paul Butler, who is a black radical, who I was on a talk show, an NPR talk show with a couple of years ago. And of course, I think I sort of dressed up for radio. He came in a t-shirt. He's a professor, but it's radio. And he said in this piece, having a well-respected judge as attorney general will help get the department out of the quagmire of partisan politics that many people think it devolved to under Trump. This is one of those lies, to be blunt, that liberals will push on you. That the Justice Department was so unpolitical under Obama? Eric Holder literally said he was Obama's wingman. And they're going to pretend that somehow the Obama administration was nonpartisan, apolitical. Never for, you know, never mind what Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch did. Let's forget all of that. We're just going to somehow suggest there's only politics in the Justice Department when the Republicans are in charge. But here's where I really pounded the steering wheel when I'm just driving in. They say, you know, just about the only criticism Garland's nomination has drawn is in the area of civil rights, where his record is, dare we say it, less robust. These are the words they use, you know. They're not bold. They're not robust, which means they're not extreme enough. So then they go back to Paul Butler, the radical professor. Garland is a moderate, so I don't see him as the bold and visionary leader on racial justice that some people were hoping for. He's not an ideologue. That's literally what he says. So basically, Merrick Garland's just like Biden. He's not ideological. He's a centrist. You know, Garland's up there testifying that somehow the Capitol riots like the Oklahoma City bombing, but he's not extreme. He's not an ideologue. But what really bothered me about this is the notion of just about the only criticism of Garland is he's not radical enough on race. There's just not one thought inside the heads of people at NPR that maybe we should actually consider interviewing a Republican or a conservative. Maybe they have a critique of Merrick Garland. I mean, this is really the way NPR operates. There's no time for any Republican concerns or critiques or thoughts. This NPR Valentine ended with how Garland hopes to continue his practice of tutoring sessions with young public school students. Carrie Johnson says the judge is working with an 11-year-old boy and his twin sister. Their mom says Garland plays math games with them on Zoom. Yes, he's got decades of public service. He helps young public school kids. He helps young people in the Copy Center go to law school. He was their writing coach. I mean, this is the kind of story you get. It's all puff, puff, puff. This is not new, by the way. In our book, Collusion, we reported that back in 2012, this same Carrie Johnson did a 7.5-minute story on Obama Attorney General Eric Holder that didn't mention any scandalous charges surrounding the Justice Department. Listeners were conditioned to get a thrill up their legs that there was a black attorney general, as they talked about the integration of Little Rock schools and how those civil rights battles made Obama and Eric Holder's careers possible. It doesn't even matter what Eric Holder does. All that matters is he's a black attorney general. This is what Democrats do. Nobody was going to ever say, it doesn't matter what Ben Carson does. It's just that Ben Carson is in the cabinet. I mean, that's not what they did. They basically suggested Ben Carson was an unqualified yutz. That's the kind of spin that black Republicans get. This story by Carrie Johnson, like the Merrick Garland story, ended by them joking about how the Justice Department at that time was suing Apple. And Carrie wondered if Holder was still treated well when he went to the local Apple store. This one was on the evening newscast, the one they call All Things Considered. That never stops being an incredibly inaccurate and stupid title for a show that usually just won't consider the conservative view on anything. This show recently aired a story on the State Department. They got an interview with the new Secretary of State. It was headlined, quote, Secretary of State Blinken outlines Biden administration's foreign policy goals. You just look at that headline and you think, that is state-run radio. That is State Department press release. And you got the same impression from the questions. Mary Louise Kelly, one of the anchors on All Things Considered My Foot, started with this first question. If I asked you for one sentence, what is the goal of U.S. foreign policy under this administration? The mission statement. What would that sentence be? Now, if I was really doing a Mary Louise Kelly impression, she's sort of a female Eugene Robinson, where it'd be more like, if I asked you for one statement, but that's... But, you know, you listen to this, and I'm reminded of the chummy vibe that Obama got when he did this whole series of interviews with their morning anchor, Steve Inskeep. And they would do these long 20-minute interviews with all kinds of puff questions, and Obama loved it, and he could talk at length, and they put the interviews out on YouTube, and everybody was happy, if you're a liberal. But this same Mary Louise Kelly, who was so nice to Tony Blinken, was the toast of liberal radio a year ago when she drove Mike Pompeo into a screaming fit after the interview was over. She demanded he apologize to Marie Yovanovitch, who was a central hero figure in the first Trump impeachment. She was a former ambassador to the Ukraine, who was part of that whole intrigue over how someone dare ask questions in the Ukraine about Hunter Biden. Kelly's first question to Pompeo was about Iran. It wasn't some open-ended, what is your mission statement, sir? She said, what is the plan? And on diplomacy specifically, is there any serious initiative to reopen diplomacy with Iran? NPR's always so very interested in making sure we're chummy with Iran. It doesn't matter to them that they're the world's biggest state sponsor of terrorism. Mary Louise Kelly went to Iran. It was nicer to propagandists in Iran than she was to Mike Pompeo. This is what we get. NPR takes our tax dollars. They fight fiercely with Republicans. This interview with Pompeo, Mary Louise Kelly was being like celebrated by Joy Behar at The View. Their donations increased. But when the Democrats in power, suddenly it's all chummy. Suddenly they couldn't find a tough question if their life depended on it. And we're paying for it. And to add insult to injury, these people at NPR will then say, oh, well, federal taxpayers, you're only paying 2% of the money to NPR, which is a lie. Because the public broadcasting people play this game where the Corporation for Public Broadcasting sends grants to stations out across the 50 states. Those stations then send the money back to NPR in D.C. as program fees. So if they want to air Morning Edition, if they want to hear One-Sided Things Considered, then they pay for it. So D.C. is being funded, but, you know, they're playing these shell games with the financing. Then they run around trying to say they only take 2% from the taxpayers. So then when you say, okay, fine, we'll scrap your 2%, then it's like, you know, our stations are going to go under. And they go and find, you know, the NPR station in Sitka, Alaska will be no more. Like there aren't stations in D.C. or New York City or L.A. that could just send their federal subsidies up to Sitka, Alaska. But I mean, this is the game that they play. I mean, they literally did this on 60 Minutes a few years ago. The 60 Minutes went to Sitka, Alaska to tell the story of the poor, poor station, the NPR station in Sitka. Well, conservatives are sick of this, and we're going to just have to put up with more of it. I'm that sick person who's still listening in my car, so I can tell you it's still an outrage, in case you're not paying any attention. It's infuriating. That's what we do. We listen to infuriating stuff on your behalf. Joining us now, MRC TV editor-in-chief Eric Shiner, who's been an actual TV anchor man They always knock us at the MRC because a lot of us, they're like, you are never a journalist.
You don't know what it takes. Yeah, no, I suffered the slings and arrows of that for many, many moons.
Well, this
many,
is...
many moons I worked for television and network affiliates.
Right. And that's where I always laugh at people because it's like, well, you're not doctors, and yet you can talk about the coronavirus like you know everything.
Well, here's a true fact. I have probably cast checks from every network except Fox. How does that work for you? ABC, CBS. I may not have a CNN. I know I got some. I don't have NBC. I know I have some from CNN, but.
I was going to start today by talking about, we're on Wednesday, there are hearings before the Energy and Commerce Committee where the Democrats are basically like, why do cable companies still allow Fox and Newsmax and OAN to exist? Now, I bring you in because if people don't know, you are a weekly regular on One America News.
Yeah, the In Focus show with Stephanie Hamill.
She's terrific. I met her a couple years ago at a Daily Caller thing. So they're threatening your TV shot. But, I mean, it's this whole notion where they're basically suggesting, and obviously this is caused by the January 6th events, where they're basically saying that conservative TV leads to violence.
Well, you know, words lead to violence. If you listen to the left enough, you know, your words, violence, your pictures are violence. Your images are violence. Everything's related to it. What's really interesting is, I don't know if you saw Rep Eshoo and McInerney, their questions.
Yeah, number seven was the doozy.
They sent out, yes, have you know you spread misinformation. Well, it's really interesting. No, you know, they mention Fox News and One America, but they don't mention CNN settling their lawsuit for defamation
right.
of a teenage boy with a MAGA hat. They
right.
don't mention CNN's three, he had an editor, reporter, and another individual resign after publishing false connections between Russia financing and members of the Trump campaign. So, you know, when you look at actual legal action that's been taken regarding defamation and people resigning, it's not Fox and One America that has had a huge result from this. It's CNN.
Well,
but they don't mention CNN
in their
questioning. It's all One America and it's Fox.
Well, I mean, Democrats, being Democrats, think that the real journalists are the Democrats. And anybody who's conservative or Republican-leaning can't possibly be a journalist. And so, yeah, it doesn't matter that, CNN's out there basically defending rioting, like Chris Cuomo is out there. Who said protesting has to be peaceful? I don't think he made that sermon on January 6th, but he certainly did it last summer.
And some people deserve to be punched, I believe, is another Chris Cuomo.
And he's actually threatened to punch a person now and again. But, Don Lemon's defended the rioting. And this is where, the Democratic critique sort of breaks down. But I think we're going to have to watch this today with some concern. I don't really think that the cable companies are going to take down Fox. I don't really see Brian Stelter's fantasy of them at least moving it next to sci-fi.
How do you move the number one news cable channel, one, out of the news? One, take it off.
Right. Because
that's really the goal here.
Right.
And the goal of the left is silence to any opinion they don't like. My favorite thing about Stelter and them commenting on this is he wants to do it to help Fox get better. It will help Fox get that's his concern.
Yeah.
Does anyone believe that? It's like, come on, pork chop. You do not want it, Fox News, to give it. That's not your concern. You want to eliminate your competition. You don't like the fact that, they always lament there's not as many gatekeepers as they used to be. It's like, yeah, you don't have a monopoly anymore. You're right. That's the future.
Well, and it's no secret that they're doing this now that Biden is president. You know, we don't really like Peter Doocy asking tough questions in the briefing. I guess we have to put up with it. But at least the station he's on should be suppressed somehow. It was kind of funny because somebody was trying to suggest, well, this is all private sector stuff. Cable companies can make the decision to suppress or put Fox News on channel 1756 because this is all private sector business. And I was like, no, this is not generally the way the private business operates. I said, if it was like Jif ran around airing ads that said, Skippy will kill you. Skippy should be removed from supermarkets. You know, that's just not and that's what they don't want to acknowledge. This is all about, we're CNN. We've lost to Fox since 1996. They need to be punished for being so popular.
There's a difference between a monopoly and a free market. There is a free market. People can decide what they want to do. But when you're trying to work or advocate a monopoly, which is what you're saying, the news stations should just be me and the people that I like. Anyone that has a disagreeing opinion, well, they should be put on the Sci-Fi Channel, or they should be put over here, or they shouldn't be carried at all. Because it's violent.
Yeah.
If you have a thought that disagrees with mine, somehow that's violence on me.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of one of the things we've got up on Newsbusters today, is Chris Hayes last night.
Lauren Boebert.
On Lauren Boebert. Where, because she posed in front of guns and she boasts of carrying her Glock around D.C., he compared her to Osama bin Laden. Is that journalism? This is where on some level... We just watch this stuff and we're like, how does anybody call this news, for one?
My favorite is, that he saw it and he said, this is a quote. They're now signaling that they retain the right to use violence to overthrow the government at any time. And he says, you know, it's a movement who's engaging in something other than what we might call the normal rhetoric of elected democratic policies, because the images of guns, the celebrations of guns, that's a political aesthetic. What does it say about the political aesthetic of, you know, groups that, front and center want to kill babies?
Yeah. Oh, but that's a choice.
Abortion.
That's a choice, Eric. Yeah. That's different.
It's women's health. What if we called it like gun health or family health or something like that? Yeah. My family is healthier because they're protected because I have a gun in the house.
I have a right to choose an AR-15. And this is Chris Hayes, who did a big ad for MSNBC a few years ago about how he bicycles into work. I mean, these are people who think driving an SUV is almost terrorism. I mean, I think Arianna Huffington actually sort of said that once.
I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Hayes thinks that.
So that brings me to one of the things you do that kind of merges with Newsbusters a little bit, and that is your weekly video called Wacky Mole for Wacky Moments of Liberal Expression, I think.
Leftist extremism. It's been updated. But
okay.
Liberal expression wasn't strong enough for what some of these people did. Yeah, it's funny because Chris Hayes is one of the things I was looking at already this week that might be on there, because his overreaction to Boebert having guns. I get it. She's obviously making a point in doing it. She could not do it just as well, but she did. But it's her right to do it. She's in her house. And to sit there and view it as a threat is what's ridiculous and absolutely silly. And, saying, oh, yes, let's take a picture of Osama bin Laden and put it there. They always want to take the right and compare them to terrorists and Nazis. We take the hearing today on how they want to get the cable networks off Fox. They want to get Fox off the cable networks and ONN, you know, because they're a threat and they're like terrorists. But it's like, you know what? You never mentioned that. What terrorists and Nazis do. How many times you guys mention Nazis on your channel and make Nazi comparisons? Is that not a violent comparison?
Yeah.
Is that not loaded with imagery?
Right.
Is that not misinformation? Because the Republican Party is not terrorists. They are not Nazis. It's just simply not true.
They would call it poetic license.
Oh, but it's not misinformation, right? Yeah.
Well, this is the problem. Yes, you could say Jim Acosta and these guys went running around saying, calling us fake news, is going to cause us to get hurt.
It's violence to call them fake news. I remember that.
And then you simply say, well, you're basically suggesting if Trump is worse than Hitler, Stalin, and Mao, aren't you endangering his safety? This is just questions they don't ask themselves. We're conservatives. We generally are saying violence isn't, you know, something that's caused by a cable channel, because nobody on a cable channel says, and tonight, go out and shoot your neighbor.
Yeah, you know? No, it doesn't. There's never a direct call. No.
So, I mean, it's...
And if there was, then that deserves to be responded to.
And nobody,
if there was a direct call, but nobody's doing that.
Well, I mean, and this is where we conservatives were almost too soft on this James Hodgkinson thing. I never thought it would be a great idea to go say, Rachel Maddow's getting Republicans shot at. Because James Hodgkinson was a fan of Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
He was a fanboy. He loved Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is causing Republicans to get shot.
He's inciting.
Yeah. I mean,
his rhetoric incites them.
This is, I mean, that's one of those things that just drives me a little crazy. And it's like, I would like to say, at least in our case, we're not engaged in this sort of wild rhetorical excess. But I mean, the thing about what you're doing is you're having fun with it. And I think it's obviously conservatives a lot of times spend so much time being mad at it. I know people probably, you know, find reading our stuff frustrating and angering. And it's like, well, sometimes you just have to laugh at it.
Yeah, and I get a lot of comments that some people are like, how can you laugh at this? This makes me so mad.
Yeah.
It's like, but if you can't laugh at it, you'll go insane.
Yeah.
And some of it is like Chris Hayes overreaction. Or, you know, CNN going out and pushing that if you don't like Joe Biden's cabinet picks, then it's only because of sexism. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
You know, they're, if you don't like anything from a Democratic administration, it's because of racism or sexism. There's no other reason. You can't just have some intellectual political differences with these people. It's sexist, they always go down that road. And frankly, to a degree, it's so ludicrous, it's funny.
Yeah, I think, and that is the answer, is I think that when we watch these shows every day, we're looking for the ones that make you angry, but also the ones that are so pathetic that it does make you laugh. Like, the idea that you think you're actually influencing people to your side with this kind of nonsense is it's funny. And we do laugh in here when we look at some of these clips. We're like, you will not believe what Chris Hayes said, and then we all laugh. I mean, that and yeah, you do have to do that, but you also have to say the idea that these guys think that they're going to win with this, but they do.
And then some of them cross all over. I mean, Ali Velshi being out with MSNBC talking about the protest, saying, well, this is mostly a peaceful protest, you know, even though things are burning behind me. And, you know, stores are being looted. This is pretty, I mean, people, the left defending that became even more funny, because anyone with one brain cell that was functioning saw how stupid and biased that was. You know, it's not a peaceful protest. They're burning down police stations in the mall, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
This is not peaceful. That's not something one would consider peaceful. And the fact that you're trying to characterize it and paint it that way looks so funny. And then, like I said, and then the left went on and kept defending it. Oh, no, he meant it. It was mostly peaceful. It's like, oh, give it a break.
Well, then maybe you shouldn't stand in front of the fire.
Yes. You might want to find a different camera angle.
This is where, yeah, you're like, the TV guy's like, well, no, we need the fire in the background. That'll keep people tuned in. And then we're going to say,
or maybe there was no angle where there wasn't a fire where they were at.
Yeah. Don't pay attention to the fire behind me. It is really amazing to see 98% of the protests are peaceful. And it's like, yeah, this is not the standard you use. If violence breaks out anywhere that a conservative is, you're not going to say, well, almost everybody was mostly peaceful. And frankly, you shouldn't. You know, you should focus on what the actual thing is.
No, but I mean, obviously I use Newsbuster stuff all the time. It's kind of a joint production with you guys.
Yeah.
And I just try to find a thread or a narrative to link. I mean, there's so much stuff on there.
Right.
Obviously, that you guys produce watching. It's like, what's the best and what's the funniest and how can I have a narrative to go from one to the other? And, you know, sometimes it's hard to decide what to chop out.
Yeah. Yeah. How long can this video go? So, yeah, I was going to say, we were talking before the show, what are we going to discuss? Well, I know what we're not going to discuss. We're not going to get into the monkeys, because that'd go another half an hour.
Oh, yeah. We don't want to go down that road, Graham.
Shiner is one of the biggest monkeys fans out there. And, of course, anybody under 40 is like, who? You went to see the monkeys at the zoo?
No, the monkeys. The
or somebody would, or yeah, or somebody would say, those Beatles knockoffs.
I'm director of MRC. No, the Beatles, you know, they didn't even do their own voices on their cartoon. They're fake. Their TV show was not really them,
yeah,
in voice or in person. So I think they're phony, because I look at video as the legitimate art. No, but being a video guy and liking music, I just think that was the perfect team up.
Yeah, so let's keep on top of what's going on. I mean, I think we're all concerned going on here about what's going to happen to the conservative media. And it's obviously a time for all of us to get out there and fight back wherever you can in social media, discussing it with your friends. We're certainly going to keep a focus on it here at the Media Research Center. So, you know, come see us at NewsBusters once, twice, 24 times a day, however much you can handle. And thanks for listening.